Well, good morning. Thank you, John, for that reminder. Simply to ask. I felt like that was something I needed in my life. Remember to do that, not to just think and to work issues in my mind, but to ask. You can pray for me this morning in more ways than one, but for some reason I woke up this morning with a little bit of a sore throat and feel clogged, and so hope that won't be a distraction. I know we welcomed and re-welcomed the visitors this morning, but I want to welcome again, especially the youth this morning, visitors and our home youth. I enjoy this time of the year when we have extra youth around. I don't get to know very many of you while you're here, but there's just something about summertime in the valley and lots of visitors and youth. It's been a part of my life growing up, and I enjoy that time of the year. And I hope that it can be a blessing for you to be here. Another reason I want to welcome you is because I think it was because of you or that God laid the message on my heart this morning, used some of those thoughts a while back as I was thinking and reflecting on my own youth days. I'm not sure what brought it to mind several weeks ago or so. I was just thinking about my youth and some of the journeys that God led me, some of the journeys that God did not lead me as well, and some of the impacts that different people had on my life in those years. The subject that I want to talk about this morning, it's not necessarily just for the youth, and I want to spend a little bit of time with the other rest of us that are not youth, because I think it is a subject that the more that I've studied it, the more that I realized that it is for everyone, from the small children to the grandparents and to everyone in between. It affects us. And to introduce that this subject, you can turn to 1 Corinthians 15. These verses here that I'm going to read, just going to read a couple verses here in this chapter. They're in the middle of the chapter, and this chapter here is touching on what we heard about in our first devotions that Gary talked about, the resurrection. And Paul is making a case for the resurrection and warning against those that are trying to undermine the thought that there is a resurrection. And Paul is concerned about this wrong teaching and this wrong influence and the impact that it could or would have if it's not clarified. And in verse 32 and 34, so that's the context of these verses. Verse 33 and 34 says, "Be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame." So the subject this morning is not on the resurrection, but the subject that I want to talk a little bit about this morning is the power of influence. Back when I was in my youth, I don't know exactly how old, maybe 18 years old, there was a young man that came out here to Oregon just for a little while to visit, to be here. And I don't think he was even here for the whole summer. He was here for a while. He was a good-looking man. He was funny. He was friendly. He was fun. Wasn't necessarily real spiritual. And I hung out with that man and spent time with him doing various things. And that boy impacted my life in ways that I didn't realize. He probably didn't realize at that time. And as I thought back on that, you know, I'm a little bit embarrassed today to admit maybe the amount that I was impacted in that time by that young man. You know, it affected the style of pants that I wore. It affected a pickup that I bought. It even affected the socks that I wore for a while. And some of you can probably relate to that, and I suppose that's not all bad in and of itself. There was other things that were not good that influenced me as well. And then just as quickly as he came, he left. I hadn't done much with him before. I haven't done much with him since. But that influence lingered in my life for quite a while, I think. Maybe a lot of it subconsciously. Influence or peer pressure can be a tremendous force in a person's life. And I think it's fair to say that it's especially in the life of young people, those of you who are spreading your wings, who are life is ahead of you. There's a smorgasbord of options to choose from. You see a lot more ways of doing it than dad and mom did it, than your church did it. Getting to know people, making new friends. You know, the world is before you. You are coming to the point where you're going to make the decisions for your life and what you're going to do and how you're going to live. And this is not bad. This is not a bad thing. This is something that is necessary. I think it's just something that this morning I want to bring to your attention and make you aware in a real way. That it's, if it is misguided, if you are not prepared for it, these things can have life-changing effects on the earth as well as your spiritual life, your relationship with God, and on into eternity. And it's a reality and it's a sobering thought to think that a summer in Oregon with friends and influence and all that goes on, the warm summer evenings and the social times, that in that moment, in a time like that, it can be very pivotal into where you go in the rest of your life. And dear youth, as I have watched just in my short time, I have seen a lot of youth. I could give you a list of names of people that have come to Oregon, maybe to visit or to work or for some other reason. They left their church. They left what they knew what was right and went on in to doing living a life that of maybe sin or other things. Maybe it was the bad influence of Oregon. Maybe it was the reasons they came to Oregon in the first place. And I realize that it is not always influence. I know that from experience. We have free choice. We as individuals decide what we want to do, and we gravitate towards that. But in times like this, behavior and habits can be formed, and friendships can be formed that will forever set the direction and destiny of your life. And this could be for the better, or it could be for the worse. And this is true for our local youth. I'm certainly not painting the visiting youth as the bad guys, and the ones here as the good guys. That's not at all the point at all. I don't see it that way. In fact, I know from experience that it can work the other way. I have been a bad influence on other people's lives. It's a lot easier, though, to reflect back in my life and be able to think of and remember the people that were a bad influence in my life and forget all the bad influences that I had on other people's lives. We tend to forget that. But I do remember. I remember some things of my own life that were not a good influence. There are several passages in 1st and 2nd Corinthians both that speak on this issue. And not sure how much I'll get to this morning, but I do want to read 1 Corinthians 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. It's a short chapter here. I'm going to read that chapter. And here is just I won't spend a lot of time here, but I think it is, again, just a concern given for the influences that are coming into the church. And you can apply this to church life. We can apply it, I think, for this morning more to our personal lives. And I don't know if you want to put yourself in the shoes of the one that is avoiding the bad influence, or possibly we are the bad influence. I think it's good for us to think about both of this. But I want to read 1 Corinthians chapter 5. It is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. And ye are puffed up, and have not rather mourned that he hath done this deed might be taken away from among you. For I verily, as absent in body, but present in spirit, have judged already as though I were present, concerning him that hath done this deed. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, when ye are gathered together, and my spirit with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ, to deliver such an one unto Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that the spirit might be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus. Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. I wrote unto you in an epistle not to company with fornicators, yea, not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or with idolaters, for then must ye needs go out of the world. But now I have written unto you not to keep company, if any man that is called a brother be a fornicator, or covetous, or idolater, or a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, with such an one know not to eat. For what have I to do to judge them also that are without? Do not ye judge them that are within? But them that are without God judgeth. Therefore put away among yourselves that wicked person. So again, Paul is warning against the influence of people and the leaven that can creep into a body, into a person, into a church. And often we think that we can handle more influence around us than possibly can. We are strong. We can handle it. But we need to remember that verse that I read first in 1 Corinthians 15. He says, "Be not deceived. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners." And I think we often have the thought and tendency that we can handle that. And the part of that, I think, is the part that he's talking about is the deception. The amount that I can actually tolerate. The amount that I can be around other friends and handle. Corruption. The word corrupt here, I found that interesting, means a couple of the meanings mean to shrivel or wither. If you think of that in that way, like a plant or a tree that gets a disease or starts to lack water, it's a gradual process. You very seldom see a tree one day flourishing and green and healthy, or a plant and dead and brown and shriveled up the next day. It's often a process. And if you watch, the leaves maybe start to wither. They start to get spots on them. And something is not right. Not always sure what it is. So early stages can be hard to identify what is going on. But as time goes on, it becomes more and more apparent that something is not right. Something is dying. And it will soon be dead unless there's intervention. And I think that is what this verse is saying. That you might be able to, and that's the deception, I think, of often we can go and we'll spend a day or a night or a weekend with some evil communication, somebody doing something that we know is not right. We walk away with that. It seems like it didn't affect us. It seems like all is as it always was. But there's something that starts to happen inside of us, just like a worm inside of a tree. The day the worm enters, you can see no difference. But as time goes on, if that thing lives in there and eats in there and the plant, it starts to have an effect. And I think that is what he's saying here. Don't be deceived. Don't be fooled. If you're going to spend time with associations that are evil, you are going to start to shrivel. It's going to corrupt. And it's going to kill if it is not changed. Someone once said there is very few blowouts in the Christian life, but it is usually a slow leak. And that is just the way it is. Have you ever noticed that? People that leave the church rarely sit here Sunday morning and are gone the next Sunday into the world. It is a process. It is a stepping in one direction. So the tone of what I've said so far maybe has been a little negative. So I have a couple questions. What is, you know, peer pressure or influence? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that we should try to guard against as Christians? To avoid, to put up walls, to make sure we're not influenced in our lives? And I would like to say no, that is not correct. As I reflect back over more days of my youth, sometimes I am just amazed and wonder at how I did not end up out in the world of sin. It truly is a miracle, I believe. I was on the path to hell. I was on the path to destruction, living in sin, making bad choices, cultivating habits that have ensnared so many men that never were able to find freedom. And so I thank God, and I wonder, and it's a mystery to me in a lot of ways, as to between His mercy and patience, saving grace. But you know, it was more than that. I definitely give God credit. But not only was it the influence of people in my life that possibly at times drug me down into sin, but I realized that it was largely, once again, the influence of others that saved me and brought me back to God. And as I looked back on this recently, just because of this subject, I think, and I thought about my journey through life and my ups and downs, there is a dot to dot to dot of people I could go back to that had an influence on my life for the good as I came back and as I started going the right direction. Some old people, some young people, some women, some evangelists maybe, but not, probably not nearly as likely those kind of men as a lot of just common people, people that are close to me. And I think that is a beautiful thing. And there's people here that were involved in that, in my journey of life, influencing me in a right way. And I still need that influence in my life as I journey on in life. I believe that that is a gift from God that He gives us. And it's a beautiful thing. And I think that that is what God intended His people to use, the fellowship and influence for, to draw people back to God and to a right way of living. We often think of peer pressure and influence as a defensive thing, as a thing that others do to me and we need to guard against, something that I need to watch out for. And that is all true. But we need to remember that we are always influencing others, whether we like it or not. And I remember that when I was living in sin, that was one thing that bugged me. Even at that point, I knew it was going on, I knew it was happening, that my influence as an older brother was going to affect my younger brothers. And I did, in my own perverted way, tried to kind of guard them from that. But it bled through. It had its effect. And that's just the way it works. Influence is the capacity to have an effect on the character and development or behavior of someone or something. Influence is a gift. It's something that we receive that we need to be stewards of. It's not something we can disregard and get rid of. We will be influential in somewhere. We can use it for the kingdom of God. We can use it to help and serve and bless others. Or we often can abuse it and use it selfishly to benefit me and my gain in life. So youth, how can you prepare yourself to not be overtaken by the negative peer pressure of life that you face? And I have no idea if you're in the middle of negative peer pressure right now or not. I don't know. I haven't heard any stories. But I have been a youth. I have been in crews and groups of people, and I know how that works. I know the pressures that often come. You get CDs circulating around. You get DVDs circulating around. You get links circulating around. And they have an effect. They impact us. What can we do? And I would say the one thing that just stood out to me, it is so simple, but I believe it is very key in a person's life, a young person's life, to not being swayed with everything that comes along, is having a proper fear of God in your life. And when a person doesn't have a proper fear of God, it's quite natural that in place of that is going to be an unhealthy fear of man. And when we have the fear of man, and when we're trying to please man, and we're trying to impress man, and we're worried what people think, we are a prime target to be influenced in a wrong way and to be vulnerable to the pressures that are around us. Without that personal connection to God and what you stand for, to at least some level, you are very vulnerable. In 2 Corinthians, I'm just going to read a couple verses. We could have read 2 Corinthians chapter 6 there. It talks about from 11 on, a whole other passage about being careful with our influences and communications. It's talking about the unequal yoke and to be careful about all that. But then he gets to the end of the chapter, and in this, I found it interesting here. It kind of goes with this thought. He talks about being separated from and separated unto. And I think that is so important. If we just focus on the things that we're not going to do, focus on not doing things, that leaves a void if it is not filled, that it won't be sustainable. And that's in this passage here, I think it's beautiful, where he talks about the unequal yoke and not being a part of all that evil. But then he gets to verse 18, and he says, "And I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." And there's where the point I wanted to make. There's perfecting holiness in the fear of God. To have a fear of God in your life, I think, does so much. When that is gone, I don't know what else to tell you. You're just going to have to do the best you can and hope for the best. Picking good friends, which is a very common piece of advice, I suppose, on the area of peer pressure. But I think there's just no way around it. You know, friendships run deep. Fellowship is, especially in our youth, is a crucial thing. It's a wonderful thing. We crave social life and friends, and that is good. That's a blessing. But there are times when friends or a family member possibly start making wrong choices, not living right. And yes, we must be kind. We must be Christ-like to everyone. But there is a time that you will come in your life, if you haven't yet, where you will have to cut ties and run for your own life and for your own good. And this can be one of the hardest things, I think, for youth to do. Especially when they have a relationship with someone. We don't want to hurt people's feelings. We don't want to break that bond. And it can be tempting to try to just go along with them, to try to win them and hope that they'll come around. But that's a dangerous game to play. Remember, be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. And I'd like to say, though, along with that, you do not need to do this in a mean way. You do not need to do this in an unfriendly way or a self-righteous way. Maybe you can pull a person aside and tell them what you're not comfortable with, what you feel is wrong. And often that peer pressure switches in a moment like that. And all of a sudden, the person that was influencing you is now convicted and is being influenced by you. And I think that is a blessing that God can use when a person stands for truth. What about, and we could think, well, what about Corinthians 9? 2 Corinthians 9, where, no, not 2nd. I'm not sure if I have the right passage. No, it's 1 Corinthians 9. What about the idea of becoming a Jew to win the Jew? And that's in the passage in the second part of 1 Corinthians 9. And I'm not going to read all that. But Paul here is saying that he became a Jew that he might gain the Jew. He became as weak that he might win the weak. He became as those under the law that he might win those under the law. And I think that is a good point. And I think that one thing I worried about a little bit and I don't want to promote is this picture of a pristine, clean box of we're in, you're out type of an attitude and approach, whether it's in our personal lives or in our church lives. I do not think that is Christ-like. As we watch Christ, He was a focused. He was focused on His mission. And a person like Paul, they were not swayed by the evil around them. And yet they waded right in and they did try to draw and impact people to them. But I would just say there's a couple principles in that. First of all, as a youth, listen to the advice of others. Know when you're crossing the line. Whenever you make a bridge, the problem with that is that it can go two ways. You might have good intentions in building a bridge to someone and leading them back across to you. But often, if we're not rooted and grounded and stable, the bridge works the other way. We find ourselves crossing back the other side. But I think here, I would say that this speaks of being people that are flexible, people that are considerate, people that are willing to adjust my life for the sake of Christ to some point. But at the same time, Paul never promoted, or Jesus never promoted, to be a sinner to win the sinner. To go along with evil to win the evil. That is not something that will work, and it's not what Christ would have us to do. The other thing I would say along with that picking good friends is have friends with older adults if you don't. Hopefully your parents. That's ideal. But if that doesn't work, for whatever reasons, find someone that you can trust and that you respect. And it's not on the same level. It's not somebody you go and maybe are with and play volleyball with and go fishing with necessarily always. But to have at least some older friends, adults that have went before you and have a broader perspective of life and are experienced. And I remember that, again, as I look back in my life, it was different of those kind of men that I wasn't buddy-buddy with them, but somehow there was a connection that they helped draw me in a right direction, helped talk sense into me, maybe. Okay, what about some of the rest of us that are not youth? Are we affected by influence? You know, there are some people, even some of us older people, that are maybe have a little less backbone, a little more wishy-washy, can be talked into something by the salesman that comes along and, swayed. There's people like that. Then there are others that take pride in not being swayed. And I'm not going to be affected by the influences of those around me, especially if they don't line up with what I think or what I want. And there can often be even a spiritual ring to that. That person maybe finds himself often taking the official opposition in a group. Has the idea that I'm going to swim upstream. I'm going to go against what the rest decided. I'm going to stand on my own two feet. I don't need the church. I don't need a school. I don't need anyone telling me what to do. It's me and God. And we need to remember, I think, that it is not spiritually strong to be stubborn and inflexible. And this applies to ministers. This applies to preachers. It applies to teachers. It applies to employers. Anyone that has a little authority in your life. We don't want to be wishy-washy. We don't want to be unstable. But just doing something for 50 years straight doesn't make it spiritual or godly. So often, people's strengths, their strongest strengths, become the very weakness that takes them down. And it is true in the life of a person that is good at going against peer pressure, good at standing up against the trends or the whatever that come down the pike. That can be very admirable. Don't seem to bat an eye or faze them or tempt them. But some of those same people have a very difficult time of lying down his own will when it comes to other ideas. Ideas for the sake of the brethren or something else in his life. And I think we just need to all remember that none of us are so smart and so well balanced and so close to God that we don't need the input and influence of other spiritual people in our lives. I think when we get to that point, we're in a dangerous situation. I was going to talk to others, just broke it down here into groups, like fathers and husbands here. I want to just say a little bit to us. I don't have a lot for each one, but my mind as I went, my thought on this subject, and the different ways that influence works back and forth. As fathers and husbands, I think we would probably tend to naturally fall into that group that just aren't affected too much by especially some of the frivolous peer pressures around us. We're not interested, we don't care, we're focused on something else. But you know, what about the influence of us on our families? You know, as a husband, you have a tremendous amount of influence on your wife. Your moods, your emotions, your likes, your dislikes. You know, with one glowering look and a snarling grunt, you can add a lot of tension in your wife's life. We can come home from work and we can bring a pleasant atmosphere, or we can be like a heavy wet blanket that just comes in and suffocates everything and everyone around us. All just from our influence, all just from our presence. We don't have to say a word, just our demeanor. And we can use this influence to serve and to bless our home, or we can use it to be king of our home. And everyone serves me and does what I want it to do and when I want it. The Bible likens us husbands as Christ in the church. Christ laid down His life for the church. And we are called to use our influence as a servant, I believe, in the home, and not as selfish. Wives and ladies, both, maybe you don't always realize it or know it. Maybe sometimes you do. But you can have a tremendous, and you do have a tremendous influence on your husband and those around you. As I just thought, not even that long, in the Bible, in the different cases there, where women were very influential at times. Sometimes to the good, sometimes for the bad. From the very beginning, we see that in Eve, the first woman, influenced her husband. And in Genesis chapter 3, when God was talking to Adam and Eve about their sin, Eve said, well, the serpent beguiled me. The serpent deceived me. And I guess we could just take her at her word for that. That was an excuse. She just really was talked into it by the serpent. But when God talks to Adam in verse 17, He says, because thou hast hearkened to thy wife. And I don't know for sure, but it doesn't seem like Adam was necessarily deceived. He knew maybe what was going on. He's seen what was happening. But his wife had done it. His wife was handing the fruit to him. And he just took it. The influence of his wife. Example of Delilah and Samson in Judges 15 and 16. You know, Samson was the strongest man that ever lived. Young man, you should listen to this part. He single-handedly killed 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of an ass. In a fit of anger at one of his girlfriend's fathers, he caught 300 foxes, tied their tails together, lit their tails with a torch, and sent them out into his wheat field. One night, trapped in the city of Gaza, they were waiting to take him till morning. He got up in the night, picked up the gate, the posts and all, and carried him out of the city into the top of a hill. He snapped new ropes like threads, the Bible says. Powerful man, a mighty man. But one thing that Samson could not conquer with all the might that he had was the influence of the woman in his life. And many men today are like Samson. And wives and young girls, if you want to, you can probably play on that. You can probably take advantage of some men and abuse that influence in their life. But we as husbands, especially, I think, need the influence of our wives. We need it to be used in a godly way. And I would just say that, you know, as I think about the dot to dots, that my wife is a big dot in my life as far as I feel like that I don't know where I'd be today if it wasn't for her influence. I don't think here. Another one I thought of was in 1 Samuel 25, and I'll just touch on this briefly, but it's a good example. Abigail, Nabal's wife. When Nabal was being like, he was a rich, rash man that was mouthing off to King David's men. And King David had had enough. He was going to send men up there and he was going to kill a whole bunch of men up there. Abigail heard about her husband's response. And she went into action and she gathered food and she got people on the road and went out there to meet King David. And I think she walked a delicate line that a lot of wives need to walk. The balance between trying to respect her husband and not pushing him too far, but at the same time intervening for his unwise choices in life. And I think that is a challenge maybe for you wives. Do the best you can in that with some of us husbands. We need that whether we always feel like or realize it or not. Parents with children. Now this is probably the most intense and long, I don't know, maybe next to husband and wife, but the parent in a child's life, the influence that we instill, we are handed a blank, in a sense a blank sheet of paper. And we our computer, we program, we teach, we influence, not only with the words that we say, but the life that we live. And we parents play a very important role in all these early stages of life, to the point where they're 18 and spreading their wings. All that prep work that we do is very important to the vulnerability that that person is going to be under when he gets to that point in life. And if he has a godly parents with a good relationship and security there, he will be much more equipped to deal with the pressures and the influences that come into his life. And the opposite is true. If a child has broken relationships, don't like his mom and dad, for whatever reasons that they are, he is a very vulnerable person, or she, to the influences, the bad influences that are out there. Because that person is desperately trying to find and fill the void of acceptance and security in their lives that they never got from their parents. Good friends and a good church can help fill that void, but no one can take our place fully as parents are supposed to. And then the roles change. The children grow up, they get married, and they begin to influence their parents. And that can be a good thing. That can be a blessing. But there again, it can be a sad thing to watch if you have children that grow up and begin to make wrong choices and take their own way, and then parents start to follow. And all of a sudden, things look different. All of a sudden, the parents start to let go of things that were always important to them. And bit by bit, the parents follow afar off. Maybe 2, maybe 3, maybe 5 years, just lagging behind. I've heard it called the umbrella effect, where as the children go out, so does the parents' acceptance. And I think that's just something, I don't know what the answer is. I can see that being an extremely challenging situation. I can only imagine the difficulty that would be to try to walk that line. Influence. Grandparents, uncles and aunts, you all are heroes often to people in your life. They are watching and look up to you and admire you. Preachers, businessmen, you know, I thought about the respecter of persons. We're not immune to influences and pressures. And we need to guard against that. We need to guard against allowing other people, trying to impress other people, trying to do things for other people, other preachers, other businessmen, whatever it might be in our peer group. That's nothing but peer pressure. We need to keep the fear of God in our lives and not allow unhealthy influences to drag us down. Influences is not limited to the relationships with people. We could talk about music and movies and social media and books. All these things can have a tremendous impact on our lives. But I just want to leave with you and mainly just a reminder. I don't know that it's so many answers, but a reminder that we live in a society of influence, giving and taking all the time. And it can be a blessing. It's like all things that God has made. There's the good version and there's the perverted version. And we just need to use them in the way that God wanted them to do. And remember that one of the keys is to have a proper fear of God rather than the fear of man. So may we have wisdom to relate to all these influences and to be stewards of the gift of influence that God has given each one of us in our realm. I thought I'd read three verses in Psalms chapter 1 that I think kind of fit with this yet. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. God bless you. Let's have a song.